Reset the podcast is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset. In this Reset the podcast, we turn to Europe and a woman who has been at the very heart of European politics for over a decade. Hélène Banner is a political communicator, speaker, and former speechwriter to the European Commission President, Jean-Claude Juncker. In this podcast, she talks about her own series of whys. Why she initially decided to work inside the European Commission. Why she decided to quit her job on the very day that she'd helped the first ever female president of the EU come to office. And importantly, why she now helps inspire young women to become authentic leaders. Her answers are revealing, insightful, and incredibly thought-provoking. And luckily for some of us, she only answered in one of her three languages in which she is fluent. Hello, Hélène. It's so lovely to see you today.
Hi, Suki. I'm so happy to be on your podcast. Hello.
Hello. So tell me, where are you today? Which country are you in?
I'm in Berlin at the moment, but usually I have to admit I'm commuting between Brussels and Berlin. I also like to live in France, but at the moment I'm mostly in Berlin due to the pandemic.
So we met at the She Conference not that long ago, and we sat on a panel together, and first of all, I thought that, you know, your background's extraordinary, you're multilingual, you were 9 years in the European Commission as, you know, ending up as a speechwriter for Jean-Claude Juncker, and now you've got this fabulous business, which is called Let's Just Be Imperfect Ladies, mm-hmm. which is just like such a kick-ass title and name for a business and really cool. So I just wanted to talk to you for a little bit and share with our listeners, you know, where you've been, where you've come from, a bit around you, but also what's inspired you to create your new business.
Thank you so much, Suki. Yeah, I mean, as you got from the title, from me, Let's Just Be Imperfect Ladies is a feeling as well as a call to action. And I guess it represents my story and where I come from. And that's why I give workshops today for women. But maybe I'll start at the beginning, where I've come from.
So where were you born? And because you're German, but you speak, how many languages do you speak?
I speak three languages fluently, French, English, and German. German is my native tongue. I'm born in former East Germany, so really with parents who didn't have the free right to speech and couldn't travel. And I guess that's where my urge came from to work in Europe and work for the European Union. And that's why I studied political science and communication science. And when I studied that, I always felt like I still don't get it. The European Union is so complicated. I need to go to Brussels to find out.
Wow.
That was my why of going to Brussels. Mm. And I ended up always in jobs where it was my role to explain it to others. So I was always in communication jobs, press officer for trade policy. Then I became very young already at 29 years old, a spokesperson for a European commissioner. Then I headed a communication team and ended up my last role was, yes, to be a speechwriter for the president of the European Commission. So that was my way of, that was always my vehicle, I guess, to explain and engage other people about the European Union, the European idea.
So I'm really interested why you went to the European Union to begin with. My stepfather, David Harris, was one of the first European politicians based in, you know, from the UK. And so, you know, for me, it feels like it's, you know, quite a male orientated environment, very political. What was it that really, you know, made you want to go and be part of that?
I guess it was, for me, going to Brussels was like doing Erasmus for adults because it was so international. My boss was British, my colleague was Spanish, our intern was from Romania, our director was Slovak, and I just felt like working together in such an environment, first of all, and working on helping, you know, countries to work together, to put it very broadly, that was just fascinating. And I guess the real fascination came from, because I studied in France as a German, and we had a class called French-German History. And we were together in the same classroom as Germans and French studying the French-Prussian wars and the First World War and so on. And I just got shivers thinking that we're now learning this from the same history book about how our countries 100 years ago were fighting one another, and here we're sitting together learning about that so that we can somehow change that. I mean, that still gives me shivers today. I guess that was my kick to go to Brussels, to really wanting to find out more and changing something too. And that was my big why. And I want to talk about this why as well, because I really went to, I really wanted to find out more, but I also, and that is how my story continues. I also left my career. I was becoming an EU official in the meantime. I could have stayed until my retirement, but somehow there was a point at which my why was kind of saturated, as if I had seen it now. It was in July 2019. I had just been nominated for the summer to work in the team of Ursula von der Leyen, the now European Commission president, who has been the first woman in that post. And I was in the room as she became the president, and I had the privilege of being on her team, co-drafting her speech there. Wow. At the European Parliament in Strasbourg. And I guess that it was literally that day when I had a voice in my head telling me, you're done.
It's so interesting. So that, and was it because she was the first female president? Was there an element of you just been through that cycle? And must have been amazing to be in the room when she was voted, you know, regardless of what your political background or thoughts are. I think all of us feel so proud and excited to have a female president.
Yes, I mean, really being in the, how do you say, in the back rooms of her becoming that, you know, we were working always, you know, through the nights, and we had meetings at 1 a.m. at night about strategy and so on, and seeing her there, her courage and how she would approach things, and how she would sometimes also say, well, this is how I do it because, and that was really fascinating to me. I also had a feeling of, I guess really because I was not looking for the career, I was really looking to find out something. And having been so close to a political and historic event happening, I just felt, okay, I could stay here now for another 5 years, 10 years, working on her team or, you know, doing something else. And I felt, no, I guess I could not reach more, or I could not learn more than what I have seen here. How, I mean, of course, there was also other things happening in my private life in the meantime that led me to that courage to also say, I'm leaving now. But I really realized that day, I think this why or this mission of understanding how the EU works in the background and so on is done. And as if helping the first woman becoming president of this institution, which I had studied and which I had been fascinated by for so long, was as if it was the first chapter of my new book, supporting women, becoming, you know, getting to the table and, becoming stronger. And I felt as if I already knew in the back of my mind, I wanted to do something new, but that had just supported my mission of, yeah, now I'm giving workshops for women, also helping them to get empowered, believing in themselves, changing work cultures, because I always believe, and that's what I've seen with President von der Leyen, when she arrived, at a press conference when she arrived in a, you know, closed meeting, the atmosphere was different than if it had been a man. And I guess...
So that's so interesting. So let's talk a bit about this and unpack this a bit, because, you know, it is about, you know, you talk about letting people be imperfect, bring them whole selves to work. And we know, you know, I think it's still about 40% of the population cover, you know, pretend to be somebody else when they are at work. Mm-hmm. Is that how you felt when you were working at the EU? Have you had experience of feeling like that yourself?
Yes, I have. I wouldn't blame it to the EU, though. I would really think this is my personal path. But I had for a long time really felt that I wore a professional mask. I had a professional Helen and I had a private Helen. And there was one particular job that I've had for 4 years within the European institutions where I felt I really have to wear that mask every day in order to protect myself, to play a, I mean, if I push it to say, I play a role, to be taken seriously also as a young woman, to be honest, because coming into a, you know, big international meeting room as a young woman, many people think you must be the assistant or you may be the intern. And then you're being presented as, well, hello, I'm the head of communication here. You are my counterpart. Welcome and looking forward to our negotiations or discussions. And of course, my counterparts were often, older men in their, you know, of course, established in their careers. And I had the weirdest anecdotes that, I don't know, one time I had been greeted with a hand kiss before a meeting. And I guess the person meant it in the most genuine way. And thankfully, I could take it with a sense of humor. And I wasn't flattered because I just felt like, this is awkward. Am I such an alien being a young woman in these roles? And to be honest, Suki, for a long time, I thought this was just the way it is. I thought this is normal that I had to bend over backwards to fit in order to read and observe what they are doing so that I can do it too, become tougher in negotiations, you know, be more cheeky in whatever, when I get attacked by a journalist as a spokesperson. And only after a burnout, and maybe we will talk about that too, I realized, oh, what if I'm just myself?
Yeah.
I don't bring this professional Helen, and I also wore very, very conservative clothing, a blazer and tights and short skirts. And I felt like, gosh, this was all my protective shield, I guess, so that nobody could possibly, I don't know, not attack me, but abuse that I was young. I guess I was trying to hide that I was young, hide that I was a woman, maybe even. I mean, I could just obviously see that I was a woman, but I was hiding parts of myself to be recognized. And
and I can see that. And actually, you know, obviously this is nobody can see you because it's a podcast, but you are you still look really young and very beautiful, very charismatic. And you know, it's not what we would commonly expect if we thought about who would be there at the heart of the communications part for the EU or many other big businesses. So I can absolutely understand that. But did that, let's come on and talk about your burnout. That pretense, that everyday trying to second guess people, to pretend to be somebody you weren't, is that what led you to your burnout? And what happened?
Yes, it would be very easy to say, oh, I had very difficult colleagues or there was a toxic work environment. Obviously, there are always these elements and extreme workloads and so on. But really, if I had to pin it down, my burnout was because I was a people pleaser, because I was a yes woman. Everybody was always coming to me and load off their problems in my desk because I was always so welcoming and nice. And I guess especially as a young woman, when you constantly get stuff like, yeah, your predecessor would do it this way, Helen, what about this? I obviously realized that as a communication manager, being 30 years old, I bring something to the table that somebody 50 years old wouldn't. So there is a reason I have been nominated to this post and this is what I can contribute. But I guess I was still, if I'm honest, trying to fit in all the time. And that's exhausting. when you cannot really be yourself at work, that's exhausting on a daily basis, especially if you don't really get the reward back. And that was, I guess, the trigger for my burnout. And I was away for 8 months, really a long time.
Wow. Helen, was there a moment where you went, I can't get out of bed, or you just couldn't face going to work? What happened then?
Yeah, it was the beginning of January, after a Christmas holiday, when I was coming back to work. You know, obviously, I'd just been on holiday, so I thought I'd be rested and so on. And I was sitting down at my office and, switching on my computer. And I felt somehow numb and as if I couldn't do anything anymore. And people were coming to my office saying, Helen, you need to decide on that. What about this project? Let's plan the year. And I just felt I'm not interested, or I'm overwhelmed and underwhelmed at the same time. So that was this kind of moment. And for the first time of my life, I went to the doctor to ask to go on sick leave until the weekend, which I had, to be honest, never done before. And I think this is also something typical of us who have burnouts. We're so reliable and very much always overperforming, not really wanting to take a step back. We feel so responsible. I don't know, subconsciously, I will always remember I had documents, spread out over my desk, and I had opened my bag. I had a big red bag, and I had put all the documents into my bag, somehow as if subconsciously I would know I might be away for longer. And that really happened. It was 8 months. And today, to be very open with you, I really felt, when I was getting on sick leave, I already knew this is a burnout. It's not a flu or something. Yeah. Because I had friends who had already been in this situation, and it was almost a relief to know what it was and to know. I think this is also a pattern of this kind of loyalty to your employer. It was almost a relief because now I had a reason to be exhausted. That was an official label. That it was okay. And I felt almost an urge for this period of resetting, Suki, and really looking at my life, looking at myself. I did a lot of therapy, did a lot of self-work, meditation, huge personal development work, which was amazing and incredible. And I'm so grateful today about all this work. I think it led me to where I am today. And I still have my diary notes from that period, just 3 weeks into my burnout. I wrote into my diary, although I was an official at the European Union, I was writing in there, I want to be an online entrepreneur.
Oh, wow, how interesting. So you kind of thought that's what you were doing. But so you had that 8 months, you were looking after yourself. And then did you go back to work?
Yes, I went back to work part-time, on part-time sick leave to, take it, slowly. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a conversation with one of my coaches the day before I returned, asking her, so how do I communicate this? What do I say? And because I really needed help to handle this. And she asked the best question in the world. She's like, how do you feel about it, Helen? And I was like, if you ask me like that, you're absolutely right. I cannot not say that I had a burnout. It would be fake, I would have to hide again parts of myself. Mm. This is just me now. And so I came back to work, very open about what had happened. I didn't pretend that I had broken an arm or that there was some other obscure reason for my absence. I was very open, and this openness, and I want to share that with everybody who's struggling. It helped me also, get back on track, because it helped me to say at some point to colleagues, listen, I'm tired today. I need to get out of this meeting, or would you mind, I need support here. It's becoming a little too much. For the first time in my life, I dared to say these things and to openly show weakness, so to say, although I today think this is leadership, really, when you openly communicate about your needs and who you are, not hiding. Obviously, there were many people who said, wow, you cannot be open about that, Helen. What will they think? And what about your career? What if so-and-so finds out about that? Those people who may, you know, later on hire you. And I was like, that's okay. It's important for me to be open about it, because if any future employer knows about it, has a problem with it, that's absolutely fine. But I don't want to work with this person. Yes. I don't want to work for that person, because if I cannot be myself and from time to time say, listen, I'm struggling, then I don't want to work in this kind of work environment anymore. And it has saved me later, because when I was then, because later on I got nominated to one of those top jobs as speechwriter for the president, my bosses knew that I had a burnout history. And that meant there was really one moment when I had to go and see my boss and tell her, I'm struggling. I think it's becoming a little too much for me right now. And she immediately pulled the plug on one project and said, Helen, thank you for letting me know. Absolutely. No problem. And that's
so helpful, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting. So how, you know, so obviously she was really supportive and you did go and get promoted, which is just a great story, because I think so many people feel they can't open up, or, you know, they push themselves so far. And then actually there's a moment of burnout or a moment where they can't cope, and then they don't go back to work. Mm-hmm. And so you did go back and you did get promoted, but on the whole, did people treat you well when you went back? Did people understand how you felt, or were there some people who treated you differently because of your burnout?
Everybody was very open to it and supportive. I also had a supportive boss back then who really even helped me. I basically created a new role within the office so that I would have another job, basically. And he supported me on that. He also supported me in getting the next top job, which, you know, really, I guess it was because I was genuine, and I was genuinely also saying, I really want to try this. Thank you for your support. And I was working in an environment where I wasn't the first one. So it was generally respected. I want to say as well that I had trouble, though, to really recharge and get my energy back, coming back to the same work environment, I would say. It really helped me to get another job, I mean, within the same institution, but to really change teams entirely when I became the speechwriter. I was changing back from Berlin to the Brussels office, and, you know, that really gave me a boost. And what I really want to share as well is, because many people may be affected by that, As I said, when I came back from my burnout, I went on part-time. And I really had these doubts. The first day I came back, I literally went home at lunchtime. I felt I was so exhausted, as if I needed another sick leave. It was so exhausting just to interact with so many people. And I had doubts, even half a year later, will I ever be able to work 8 hours a day again? You know, it took a really long time. And then, you know what happened? When I then got nominated for this, you know, top job, which I also knew I would come into a work environment where I would love the I knew already the kind of environment and the people, I was able to work 14 to 16 hour days again, because I got so this vibrant environment and I got so much back. And I want to share that story because it's so difficult to imagine when you are in a burnout that this is possible. But I really learned that this is an energy cycle. You give something in, you receive something back. And when the return is so big, the excitement, the learning curve, the reward, you have the energy again. I really found that a fascinating experience.
That's a great thing to share. So thank you for doing that. Because I think a lot of people worry about, you know, when they've been ill or they've taken time for burnout. I know, I don't even know if you know actually, but I've had cancer several times. And each time I've gone back to work after having had cancer, there was always that moment of thinking, well, I'm too exhausted. I don't think I can do this. And then actually you are able to. But I'm interested when you said, you know, you could then go back to 14 to 16 hour days. Do you think that's good to work that much? There's a recent article about Goldman Sachs where some of the employees in the business have said they'd like their week capped at 80 hours of working a week. And you just go, that's not good. No one should be working more than 80 hours a week.
No, nobody should be working more than 32 hours a week, I guess. And no, I don't think this is a good thing to work 14 to 16 hour days. obviously you need support. You need a family or a partner who supports that. You don't have a normal life. You're constantly available also on weekends. It's an impossible journey. And I only said yes because I knew it would only be for a year. That was politically, the reason was political because the mandate would be over. And so I said to myself, I'm going to be able to do that for a year. Yeah. But that's it. But what is also true is in those environments, when you advise a politician, it is just expected that it's like a deal or something, the rules of the game. And it was a little bit absurd because we were partly working on topics such as politically work-life balance and social standards for jobs. And yet we were ourselves very much, working different hours. And I guess that was also one of the reasons I wanted to leave that work environment, because I needed more freedom to decide when and how I work. And it, as I said, it was just expected in that work environment I work in. And today I feel like, having created my own business, I can create my own rules, my own values. One day I can share them with employees, and somehow we're creating a new world as well. And I feel this is important as well to say, because we are female entrepreneurs, and obviously we also have different measures of success and what a good business environment means. And so I'm just fascinated by being able to bake my own job now.
And it's a lovely thing to do you think that politics in general could work in a different way? Is there a way? I mean, I'm very interested in, like you, nothing wrong with hard work. I have to stop myself being a workaholic. I really rein myself back. And of course, there are times in our lives when we want to work an awful lot. Mm-hmm. But do you think it is possible for politicians in particular? I mean, we can think of other ones, like perhaps some of the financial services people, some of the people who are doctors, for example, to be able to be effective without working those really, really challenging long hours. Is there a different way?
When you ask that question, I feel inclined to say, of course it's possible. We just have to be able to imagine it, right? And it's often because we cannot imagine something that we say, oh, it's not possible, right? Because of certain pressures, because of the media, because of pressure groups and so on. But this is all stuff that we invented. And I guess it can be changed. I, for example, working in more in the advisory role of politicians, you are, for example, working in hierarchies very much. And this is something that is set in stone. And I start to think about why. It is a very, vertical way of seeing the world, in very much, what is your rank kind of terms. And I realize that as women, we think more in horizontal terms, in relationships and alliances, win-win situations, teamwork. And I just question, these structures, we have created them as society. And I'm not blaming, this is just always the fruit of history and of societal developments. But of course, it's possible to change. Is it easy? No. But I guess more diversity, in leadership positions and in decision making tables will make a huge difference, and has to make a huge difference how it can work. But obviously, I'm not saying it's easy. Media and the pressure, and obviously, there are a lot of things that are very tough in politics. But also to allow for more diversity in politics, so that it's not only the, established man or established woman who can even be a politician, so that it's more open for, mothers of, a family or single dads to become politicians. It needs to be possible for our society. I mean, we as a society need to make it possible, because we want diversity in our leadership, right?
Yes. And I guess, one of the things we have seen from the pandemic, one of the upsides of the pandemic, although it's been very challenging for so many, is that we have seen that people can work in a fundamentally different way. So, if that's possible, of course we can imagine a future where we can work fundamentally differently.
Oh, yes.
I want to come on then just finally to just talk to me a little bit more about Let's Just Be Imperfect Ladies. Why is it that particularly women, we want to be perfect, don't we? If I think as a young you know, a young girl, when I looked up at what I would be like as a business professional, it definitely was in, you know, a fitted suit and painted nails and beautiful hair and going to nice restaurants. And, you know, and of course, some of that has become a reality and some of that's lovely and really enjoyable. But it has certainly driven me at times to just being ridiculous because I thought I needed to be perfect. But getting myself out of that is quite hard.
It is. And I consider myself still a perfectionist, even if I'm giving and holding imperfection trainings for women now. I'm not a sociologist or psychologist, but I guess we are brought up in that way of, having to comply to certain expectations as girls. And by the way, men too, they are told, boys are being told not to cry and so on. I mean, there are on both sides, obviously, pressures and expectations to be nice, to be smiley as a young girl, to take care of the others. And I realize working with a lot of women who are a little bit like me, that we are so empathetic and wanting to take care of other people's needs around us, that we also very much look to others to get, confirmation. Am I okay? Was that fine the way I did this? You know, it's our genuine human desire to be approved. And I felt when I was at work, I was constantly overperforming, to be honest. And I always compare it to a high jumper in the Olympics. It's enough to jump over the bar, to jump over the bar. But I would always jump over the bar like this, creating a huge, buffer zone, which was my security zone to be absolutely sure that I would be approved, that people would say, this was great, Helen. And so I was making myself dependent on other people's approval. And I really only learned that during my burnout. That's why I'm grateful that it's for me to give me myself that approval, that I need to train my own self-worth and become my own best cheerleader so that I become more independent from other people's approval. And this is the work, it's really inner work that I'm doing in my workshops that are being called Stop Being Nice or Stop Saying Sorry. I'm hitting those pain points that are really, to be honest, my own pain points as well. So that we women, and I'm talking to women here, follow our own needs. Some women are telling me, Helen, I haven't even realized that I had the right to think about what my needs are. I'm so constantly looking after everyone else. And so to get into our full potential, it's so important that we are free of other people's opinions. And that's why I love the work on daring to be authentic, daring to show ourselves just the way we are, imperfect. I think it's so important, especially for us women, because if you look in media and fashion and so on, the image that is being portrayed as women is always you have to do your hair before you go out or, have to look in a certain way. That women show up publicly imperfectly is something outrageous.
and very much commented on, isn't it? Particularly in public figures and politicians, even at business scenarios where if you don't look as good as you can look, don't expect everyone to be beautiful, that people do comment on it, but they rarely comment on a man that looks a bit disheveled or a little bit out of shape. You know, it's very difficult, isn't it? I think, and I find, in your training, getting people to talk is such an important part of that, isn't it? You know, in our workshops, I'm always delighted, but slightly amazed when people are just so grateful to hear other people's stories and hear that they're not the only person, they're not the only one feeling some of these things. What do you find is the most difficult thing for women to, on the whole, overcome?
I feel it is really this trying to comply to other people's expectations, trying to be nice and come across as good enough. And it's the genuine thing that, I may not be good enough. And that leads us to overperform, to do stuff, to say yes, although we feel no, I really feel that this is the biggest thing, the people pleasing, to be honest, our disease to please.
Yes.
And I have experienced myself by coming back after my burnout just as myself, and really trying to get the courage of showing up as myself in my clothing, being a young woman, still sitting at negotiation tables. I felt powerful all of a sudden. I felt as if, oh my God, all the men here in this meeting, they are still playing roles. They have to make it up just, you know, so that to play the game amongst them. I'm just taking this freedom here of being imperfect myself, authentic. And that made me, I feel like no one can touch me now. If I stop trying to fit in and just dare to be authentic, that is leadership to me. Obviously, it needs training and it needs the encouragement, as you say, by others that it's okay to be imperfect. Yeah. But I really think, and that was the key for me, I will contribute to change work cultures here in my organization if I dare to show up as myself. And maybe if more and more women do that, at least that's the goal in my trainings, we can also support men in not having to play those roles anymore, because the pressure on success, on a successful man, is also so high on a completely different level. And many men tell me that it's exhausting and they don't really want to be part of this alpha male culture, but somehow you have to play parts of this game to be successful. And I really think we have a great role to play as women and men, obviously, but I'm working with women on that.
Yes, yes. Be
more authentic in the workplace. We have the possibility to change so much.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love the quote, I think it's an Einstein quote, that is, if you ask a fish to climb a tree, they think they're stupid. And, you know, what you're clearly doing is getting women to know that they can be strong, they can be authentic. They don't have to climb a tree. If they're a fish, they can swim and they can be amazing at swimming. And other people can, you know, climb up a tree, but it's important to find out to be ourselves and to be authentic to ourselves. And Helen, you have clearly found that for yourself, but for so many other people as well. So thank you so much for sharing your story with me today. I wish you so much success in what you're doing. And I hope that, you know, we'll keep in touch and hear more about how the business grows. And also maybe one day we'll see politics change and evolve as much as we both would like it to and we can both imagine.
Thank you so much, Suki, for having me. And I look forward to staying in touch and let's continue the conversation. I always feel the more we are to talk about it, I mean, if other people want to talk about my topics, please do. Don't ask me for permission or let's spread the word, because we need to have more conversation about women not having to become stronger, tougher, you know, more assertive to make it. But that they can be just themselves. They are already strong in their female strengths, and men too, by the way. And I guess when we have both genders in their full capacity, in their full potential, oh my God, what is possible, you know? Looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you, Helen. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the Podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends, and family. Reset the Podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.